Citizen Education Committee to order. Thank you all for being here this morning. Today is Friday, February 7th, 2020. It's 9 a.m. In attendance are Senators Coghill, Hughes, Costello, Begich, and myself, Stevens. We have a quorum to conduct business. And before we start, I just want to comment on the Kaktovik loss. The school was an entire loss in a fire, apparently. I appreciate the commissioners being in contact with them and letting us know how things are going, and if there's anything we can do. It's going to be very difficult, of course, for those students to continue through the school year with finding a place to go to school. So our best wishes are with them all. So today we're going to have continue hearings on the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6, the Alaska Reads Act. Intention is to have some additional invited testimony to discuss some desired changes to the bill and to hold the bill for further review. Any questions or comments from the members of the committee before we start?
I do.
Yes, sir. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to express my appreciation to you and your staff for your diligence in making sure everyone has a voice that's heard here. I want to put on the record just a couple of things. Commissioner approached me back in late October and suggested conceptually the idea of putting this bill together. And I think that was really a very, very bold move by the administration to reach out and suggest that we could combine different forces and make something work. And I know I've testified that in the past, but I really want to reinforce that after a very, very difficult year with a lot of animosity, through the legislative process that divided our legislature, that divided the administration and the legislature, the fact that people could reach out and try to make something work, I think, was commendable, and I really wanted to once again thank the commissioner for reaching out. But I also wanted to point out that we are at a beginning point in this legislation that really has moved rapidly and, I think, effectively. One of the things I've noted in the testimony, and I appreciate, is the philosophical debate that is going on about many of the issues we care about, some of which aren't actually relevant to the bill. And I know you've pointed that out in some of the testimony, to some of the testifiers as well. So I would ask everyone to take a step back, make sure as you listen to testimony, regardless of whether it was last week or earlier this week or next week, that you remember the components of the bill, which are early education, which is supported by a strong identification of the elements of successful reading that includes intervention and that brings all those things together. When I say intervention, I mean support for those schools that are failing. Let's keep our eye on the ball as we go through this process and not end up spending so much time philosophically debating issues that aren't in the bill. And I just wanted to put that on the record before we start. I know we have a lot of testimony today. I'm going to listen. I'm not going to ask a whole lot of questions. I know that shocks you, Mr. Chairman, but I want to hear from the testifiers, and I want to hear from the public as well on this bill. So thank you for that moment.
Thank you, Senator Begich. I appreciate you bringing us back to the basics and why we are here and what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish, and appreciate those thoughts. So let's move on then to the bill itself, Senate Bill 6. Senator Begich, any other comments you'd care to make before we begin?
Okay. No, I'm looking forward to the testimony.
Thank you so much. I'd ask you to hold your questions until the presenters have a chance to go through the material they are prepared to give us. We've only given them 20 minutes apiece, so it's going to be a time crunches, I'm afraid. So hold your questions until later. We're going to hear today from invited testimony from Dr. Lisa Paradis-Skiles, Dr. Bridget Weiss, Norm Wooten, and Tim Parker. So we begin with Ms. Skiles. If you'd come forward, please, Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Glad to have you with us.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to testify this morning. For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Skiles Parody. I am the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators, representing superintendents, elementary and secondary principals, school business officials, and school administrators serving our students across Alaska. I wanted to point out My staff here with me, Shauna O'Sullivan and Austin Burdett, who is a fellow with the Jonathan Christ Tompkins Fellow Program, and they've spent enormous hours doing research and support on this bill as well. I want to thank Senator Begich for his leadership and for bringing this bill forward for education and for reaching out to our organization following introduction of the bill, soliciting input from our members, and we really appreciate you doing that. In response to his request for input from administrators, I have done a survey to all districts to get their feedback on different parts of the bill, reading, just feedback from the field, some of which is going to be included here. I have about 25 responses, so about half, and I will continue to provide that information to the committees as it moves forward. I also want to thank Commissioner Johnson for recognizing the critical importance of early literacy and reading to all of our students in Alaska. And we're really happy to see the topics of this bill as the focus of the committee, and we're very optimistic, I would say. We look forward to continuing to help shape the best bill possible for all of our students. Quickly, ACSA also administers the Alaska Staff Development Network, commonly known as ASDN. ASDN has been serving Alaska educators with high-quality professional development, professional learning for almost 40 years. The mission of the Alaska Staff Development Network is to improve student achievement by providing research-based online learning and face-to-face professional development programs for Alaska's teachers and school administrators. So last night, Senator Begich and Senator Costello, Commissioner Johnson, Senator Hughes' staff, many of us were at an event that was focused on civil discourse in education. And it really got me to thinking that it's relevant to where we are today in that all of us want to do the best to support our students. And we may have different routes on how to get there, but we have efficacy, I guess, like focus to try to do something positive. And I was just having a conversation with my good friend, former Representative Reggie Jewell, and he made the comment that we all want to get there, and this bill has to work for every student, wherever they live. And I think we all can feel good about that. In my remarks today, I want to provide a little context around how we can all think about SB 6 in Alaskan education. Dr. Weiss will follow my presentation with, she has deep experience in early literacy and is a well-respected education leader and can go a little bit deeper in the bill. But I'm going to try and give a little context to education in Alaska as we lead up to her in-depth look at the bill. The bill is not unidimensional, and I think we need to look at this in a multidimensional way, which is what I'm going to talk about in the slides to come. But I do want to recognize that NAEP, while an incredibly important indicator, is not the only indicator of success for our students in public education. And I just want to give you three examples, one of which is on the screen. Here, Alaska high school graduation rates, which have shown considerable growth. We're constantly improving. Very positive. Here's another example of ACT scores, our example of Alaska students at or above the national average from 2018. The source is ACT.org. Our SAT scores, again, our SAT scores are at or above the national average. Just a reminder that while we have a lot of work to do, and no educators are afraid of accountability and do want to focus forward for all students. Education is doing a good job. And this idea that it's needs to be fixed, I think, is not exactly the full picture when you look at some of these statistics around our student success. So I want to call your attention to the packet that I provided you. In your packets, I have included the ACSA joint position statements. And all of you who have served for a while are well familiar with these. They look like these. They're in your packets. At the end of each legislative session, our members work really hard to identify our highest priorities in education. And then they vote on them after months of tweaking, and they're embodied in this document. And the first position I want to call your attention to is the early childhood position, which is on the screen. But I think it embodies that our members support the core concepts in SB 6, as they know that the research clearly demonstrates that early intervention and instruction is one of the best ways to increase student achievement across all demographics and create the greatest opportunity for all students to read proficiently by third grade. They've been advocating this, as Senator Begich knows. We've long been a supporter of SB 6 for the time that I've been in this position. This is a long-held and supported belief by our members. And they also know that early childhood education should be a part of public school funding through the base student allocation. So we're really supportive to those provisions in the bill. Another position I want to call your attention to is preparing, attracting, and retaining quality educators. This position, again, is in alignment with the Alaska Education Challenge. I know that Commissioner Johnson and I worked on this exact provision together. In the way that it ended in the education challenge. And I include it here and highlight it because we all recognize that attracting and retaining effective educators is essential to student achievement. And that's another dimension that we have to recognize as we look at this bill. This is recent data produced by the Northwest Regional Education Lab. It was requested by the Department of Education Early Development, the University of Alaska, and our organization. This is also in your packet. Looks like this. And it really was requested to be able to show you, our policymakers, the current look at turnover. And this, again, is another dimension that we need to consider the bill. I direct you to our rural and remote areas, where we have 36% turnover for teachers and 38% turnover for principals. This kind of turnover undermines any program's implementation. And I think when we think about this bill, we have to also consider alongside it, what are we going to do with these other pieces? Because if you have this kind of turnover, the success of any programming is going to be undermined. I'll add to this that today, almost half the superintendents have 2 years or less experience. And I think about this in terms of a business. If you are a business and your frontline staff, your teachers, are turning over a third at a time, and your middle management is turning over almost a quarter of a time, and your CEO or your senior leadership is turning over like we see superintendent turnover, I have to ask, what does that output look like? So in terms of this bill, let's make sure that we're looking at this dimension as well. The social, emotional, and mental health is the last position that I would draw your attention to in the joint position statements. And also refer you to this incredible resource that the Department of Education and the AASB have put together, and you also have this in your packets. And just share that yet another dimension in Alaska student experience with their high rates of trauma. These adverse childhood experiences are another important piece, I think, of this bill that we need to consider as we move forward. One in two of Alaska's youth have lived through one or more ACEs by the time they begin kindergarten. This is the age group we're talking about in SB 6. We must address the social-emotional health of our children. And the department has taken steps to, pay attention to this through this work, as well as the yearly gathering around these issues. But in terms of moving forward with a huge initiative, all of these have to be considered, right? This is a graphic representation of this reality that I got, I believe, from the Department of Ed from the Behavioral Risk Factor Survey. And It basically just says that the more adverse experience, the lower the rate of high school graduation. So more trauma, fewer graduates from high school, more trauma, less college achievement. I want to move quickly to RTI. RTI is response to intervention. And I have, again, in your packets, and I know Mr. Lampkin has put online, definitions around RTI. And basically, when students struggle with academic achievement or behavior, schools need a method for providing systemic and data-driven intervention. The main goal of RTI and MTSS, multi-tiered system of support, is to identify and provide intervention before students get too far behind. And so in its simplest form, it can be broken down into the three tiers shown here. And I wanted to show that this is a resource from the Department of Education as well as the Anchorage School District. Most districts are heavily engaged in at some level of RTI. But remember, against the backdrop of turnover, you're constantly retraining folks around this. And in the bill, it does account for that. And you've heard Commissioner Johnson refer to RTI MTSS conference that ASDN, our organization, puts on every year. A couple times in his testimony, he has talked about the quality of that conference and the support that we're providing to districts. In our most recent conference, which was about 2 weeks ago, there were 49 school districts represented, and that represented about 1 in 10 educators. Over 1,000 educators attended. And this foundation is currently in place, and it supports the goals of the bill. So I really feel, again, optimistic that we can work with the department to continue to support districts in this kind of professional learning. We're not starting from scratch. This is a 10-year-old conference that was started by the Anchorage School District in concert with us that we now put on as a private nonprofit, but it serves Alaska, and I know the commissioner and I've talked at some length about working together on professional development as we move forward. So again, I've included for you information in the packet about the specific conference itself. So if you have questions about speakers or anything there, Doug Fisher was our keynote, and you can see that he's a recipient of International Reading Association Literacy Award. I mean, just a number of amazing recognitions for his ability in this area. And we bring in the highest quality talent because a lot of our districts can't travel. They don't have the funds to do it, and they no longer go outside to do it. And so our effort is to have them be able to have access to the best presenters in the country. And we've been successful in doing that. So I want to move to one of the researchers that we've worked with, and I had tried to get them for invited testimony here, but hopefully we'll be able to in a later committee so that people can have the benefit of asking him questions. But Dr. John Hattie is an internationally renowned education researcher who's focused on what works best in education. His research is based on nearly 1,200 meta-analysis, and he's provided a list of the relative effects of different factors on student achievement. And I wanted to call your attention to it. It's in your packet, like this. And effect size tells you how powerful a factor is in making change, right? Effect size is simply a way of quantifying the size of the difference between two groups. It allows us to move beyond the simplistic, does it work or not, to the more sophisticated, how well does it work, and in what range of contexts. So Cohen's D, which you'll see, is the effect size used to indicate the standardized difference between two means. And it's the appropriate effect size for the comparison between the two means. Just want to share the hinge point is 0.4. You see Cohen's D. And that's where you get a year's progress for a year's school. With a higher effect size, you get greater progress. And, of course, that's what we're trying to do for kids with this kind of program is to move them to make sure that they're with their peers. But I guess one thing I would say is when you look at this, there's collective efficacy on the top. It's the first, It's the first and most powerful one. It's the one clear over in a year's or in the blue zone where we want our strategies to be. And I think of collective efficacy as kind of what Reggie Jewell said. We can do this. We're all on board to do something for our students as well, like the will and the belief that we can make that change, right? And then response to intervention, which we have in this bill and which I shared, we do the conference for Alaskan educators. You can see, very effective in the zone of desired effect for students and student outcomes. And the point that I think I wanted to make with you with this research is that you see that a concern we have is that retention has a negative effect of negative 0.32. And this is Dr. Hattie's research that's well accepted across education experts. And I just wanted to share it with you because I know that's been one of those philosophical discussions that's happened, and I think we need to consider both sides of that, that if we're hurting kids through a strategy, then perhaps we need to reconsider that. And I listened to Dr. Winner's study on the Florida's retention policies, and after the hearing, our team looked a little bit closer at the research. And while we are not discrediting the entire study, we are merely pointing out that it is not clear what the pure effect of retention is. He is unable to differentiate between the impact of treatments or the interventions and the strategies that we're applying and retention. And that's significant. If he can't really differentiate the two retention as a clear indicator, but versus repeatedly saying does not allow for separating the effect of retention from these other interventions, then we're not clear that retention is intervention. And that, combined with Dr. Hattie's research, I think should make us pause and look at this again. As I shared earlier, we surveyed all Alaska school districts, and we received information back from about half. And this slide walks through some of the feedback that we've received so far. And again, it's not done, and we'll continue to provide additional feedback as we receive it from school districts. But I think there are questions about how this can go forward. Overall, unanimously, district reading programs should include diagnostic assessment to identify significant reading deficiencies of students, including a universal screening tool that measures phonological and phonemic awareness. I mean, every respondent agrees with that. And yet, what current benchmarks and progress monitoring assessment tools do your districts use to track student proficiency levels? I think there's maybe 15 different programs listed. So that's where I think we have to keep working, is how do we maybe provide a menu of options versus a single option, as an example. With regard to the retention piece, 4 so far have agreed with the statement, and almost 70% have disagreed that retention would be an effective strategy. And several didn't answer because they don't know what that impact is. And again, we'll keep monitoring that. But the far majority of folks in the field would disagree with that. And I think just reading through this, recognizing everyone understands and supports that reading is high priority, unequivocally everyone supports universal pre-K and its inclusion in our formula. Recognize that this is an issue of equity, and want to just drill down into some of the other details in the bill. Concerned about mandated intervention services. There's also concern about lack of educator input during the involvement or lack of input during the creation of the bill. And just want to thank Senator Stevens for taking time and allowing for a lot of of opportunity for educators to review the bill and know that there will be public input given, and just ask the committee, as Senator Begich said earlier, to let's talk and think and work together forward on this, because there was very, very limited educator input on the front end, and so now is the time to hear from the folks in the field how this might impact their district positively or negatively, or what questions they have, and how can we make this work for every student. So I think I'd just like to answer any questions, or I know we have a lot of invited testimony, Senator Stevens, but I really appreciate all of your time today, and we stand ready to be a resource, and our members are vested in this. You know, the responses are very positive, and that's why I opened with saying how optimistic we are. But I think, in fairness, because there wasn't a lot of involvement in the creation of the bill, this is the opportunity, as Senator Begich said, to hear from folks and to maybe shape it forward so it does work for every student. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments. Always good to hear from you. We are sort of under the gun here on time. I know everyone has questions. I certainly have questions, but I'll make sure I get them to you separately. So, again, thank you so very much for being here. We'll move on to the superintendent from the Juneau School District, Dr. Bridget Weiss. Pleasure to see you again, Dr. Weiss.
Good morning. I will try to be efficient in my comments. I am Dr. Bridget Weiss, and I am a product of Juneau, and as well as my parents and my grandparents. So this place and this state is incredibly important to me. I have spent my career trying to make a difference for kids, and I've done that for 36 years. I hope to do it for a few more years. I'm a fierce advocate for achievement. I spent my first 16 years teaching high school mathematics, and so I am not an early literacy trained specialist. However, I've spent much of my career focusing on early childhood programming, developing such in Juneau, as well as elementary principal for 3 years after 20 years at secondary level, which was a fascinating experience to go to the beginning. After working for 20 years on our end product, to go to the beginning, it was incredibly informative, educational, and really formed much of the last 16 years of my work, that experience did. So I do want to thank Senator Begich and others who have worked, Commissioner Johnson, on this bill. We absolutely agree. I'm going to try to be efficient in my comments, but I do want to emphasize that reading achievement, math achievement, literacy achievement in general is one of our top priorities. In Juneau, our school board has had that as one of our legislative priorities, as well as on our strategic plan. We're just writing a new strategic plan, and we have reading at grade level by grade three as in two places. We have it, one, in our achievement pillar, and we also have it in our equity pillar, because we're recognizing that we have certain subgroups who are we are more challenged in meeting their needs. So we're naming a few of those subgroups. It's a little bold. It's not finalized yet, but I'm encouraging my school board to take a bold statement and say, if we are going to do this, we need to do it genuinely and pragmatically. And we have our economically disadvantaged students, we have our Alaska Native and Native American students, and we have our English language learner students who have demonstrated that we are those are the areas where we are the least meeting their need in achieving grade level proficiency. So we're going to name that, and we're going to measure our progress, and we're going to attack it. So we're deeply committed to that. I know in all of my discussions with Southeast superintendents in the last few weeks or months since this bill has come out and previous to this about achievement, they are in. They are all in and committed to increasing achievement. So I don't want to spend much time on the early learning, because I do need to say that that's critical to the work. We have currently one-third of our kindergarten students showing up in Juneau, and mostly we're a little higher than the average, the state average, but it's pretty close across the state, ready for kindergarten. So we are starting kindergarten with kids sitting in the dugout. They're not even at the plate yet. Right, and we have to get them around those bases. So we know and we appreciate the acknowledgement that the work prior to us getting kids when they're five and in kindergarten is critical. So again, we've developed programming in Juno through a variety of grants. That has been on our school board's strategic plan and legislative priorities for multiple years. And there was some pushback initially because we're a K-12 institution. So how could a school board of a K-12 institution have a priority around early childhood? And they owned it. And as a result, we were able to get grants, city support, and now we have some really effective programming going on. I serve on the steering committee for Rock Juno. It's a Raising Our Children with Kindness committee based on looking at a collective impact frame of gathering resources, agency resources to the betterment, the empowerment of our youth in Juno, and from cradle to career. And early childhood is one of our focuses. The mayor in Juno has had a task force last year. I served as co-chair of the child care task force for the city. And we've developed some options for the city to support high quality child care. One of the things we ended up really stating strongly is 0 to 5 is all about learning. So whether a child is 6 months or 4 years old, we want them in the highest quality learning environment appropriate, developmentally appropriate for them. And Juno's making a difference that way. One of the parts of the bill is accountability. I have lived long enough in this field, I've seen accountability. You all have seen and lived and heard about accountability. We had No Child Left Behind, adequate yearly progress. In the state of Washington, where I spent 26 years before returning to this amazing place that I will never leave again, we had Washington Assessment of Student Learning, and we had high stakes graduating qualifying exam. I lived through that. I lived through it personally as a school administrator, helping kids get to the stage. And it was traumatic for many of those kids. It has now gone. My own children were class of 2008 and 2010. They were part of that accountability system. They passed the test the first time. I worked with lots of students that didn't. I tutored a girl to be able to take that test 3 times and finally pass it in tears, fearing that she would not walk across stage with her classmates. It is gone. That system is not in place anymore in Washington. So I want us just to be prudent and wise. We want to be held accountable. Our strategic plan is built with measures and strong layers of accountability, and we're being very strategic about what we choose to measure and what strategies we're putting in place. So I'm not opposed to accountability. I hold myself accountable every day. Every day I wake up and think, how can I just have to keep at it because there's more and more to do. But broad scoping accountability that has a tenor of shame, we have to be super careful. We have to inspire our educators. Dr. Parity talked about teacher retention. I'm picturing myself at 21 years old when I became a teacher. I'm not sure I would be inspired to this challenge, the way that it's framed. So language, tenor, tone is super important. When we say a district is going to post on their websites how many children are retained in third grade, in second grade, in how many, to what end, I ask? To what end? Report to the state? Report to our school boards? All in. We're not making progress. We're bottom 10%. All in. How are we going to collectively work together to make a difference? But accountability needs to make sense, needs to be pragmatic and connected to the goal of the bill, which is to increase achievement. We will not shame achievement. It just doesn't work. It hasn't worked in the past. We've seen lots of examples. That ties to retention. I won't belabor that point. It would be a great civil discourse, Senator Begich, who was there last night as well, right? As to, is it mandatory, is it not, is it conditional retention, how it's written in the bill, and whether that is the direction, if that's necessary in the bill at this time or not. So you've heard some opinions on that. I certainly would fall I have to speak for the dominant voice in the superintendents that I represent. Are not in support of that factor in the bill. There's a few things I've heard that I feel like I need to address, and one is money doesn't matter. It's not about funding. I think we have to be really careful when we say statements, global sort of far-reaching statements. Is it all about the funding and money? Absolutely not. But we can't deny there's a connection between economic status of our families and the resources they have or they don't have, and the resources that districts have. I think it was last week, it might have been the beginning of this week, my weeks run together, we were on the phone with Senator Begich and Senator Keel and a group of Southeast superintendents talking about the bill. And Senator Begich mentioned how challenged the Department of Education has been because of their dwindling resources, and that this bill would support that. And amen. Like, it is, it, nobody can do it in isolation. We need the support of the department. We need them to be funded so that they can support school districts. And we need to recognize that school districts along the same timeline that DEED has lost their resources, school districts have lost resources, and our needs have increased. So we've been challenged. We don't have a nurse. In Juneau, we don't have a nurse in every building. We used to have 6 instructional coaches. We then had 3. We now have 0. We have 1 middle school counselor in each of our high school with 450 kids in one, 500 in another. During the same period of time, our economic status in Juneau has decreased in the last 9 years, 50%. So our percent of low, free and reduced lunch families have increased 50% over the course of the last 9 years, while our resources have dwindled. I can't say money doesn't matter. I think a whole lot of things matter. That's one of the things that does matter. So again, tied to the bill, we have to look at it for unfunded mandates, unfunded expectations. How do districts do this when they are absolutely strapped? I talked with a kindergarten teacher yesterday. She said, give me 17 kids. I might not get them all to proficiency, but I'll get really close. I have 27. I don't know what to do. And that breaks my heart when I talk with teachers, because we have really good people doing good work, and they are so stressed trying to meet the needs that no matter what program we lay on top of it, it's going to be challenging. So I think there's a lot of dimensions, and that we have to look at the cost to be responsible. You have to, I have to, as a superintendent. I will have to take, once this bill passes, what are our expectations, and what's the most effective, most efficient way we can get this done with our limited resources. And I think it's your responsibility as you approve the bill to also just keep that in mind so that you're not setting us up for a different kind of failure, because we are in, and I have never been in a room with multiple people that I didn't grow or think something new and different, better, when I walked out compared to when I'm in a room by myself. So I think we can do it, but I also think I don't want to lose the opportunity by having it feel undoable, shameful, or hurtful to children in their developmental process, because I have watched kids for 36 years and committed every fiber of my being to their development, and so have so many other educators. And so I want to set our teachers up for success. Let's see. Again, with the cost, we've seen, if you look at the increase of free and reduced districts, or sorry, states with free and reduced rates going up, and their performance in reading on the NAEP, you can see the line of regression going down. There's a connection between the economic, socioeconomic status and performance. We know why. We know resources are limited. One of our other pieces of our strategic plan is family engagement. The beauty of early childhood is it gets us, it's multiple things, but one of the things it does is gives us access to families 1 to 2 years earlier than we do when they walk into kindergarten. So not only do we get access to the children, we get access to the families, and it is absolutely undeniable the work we need to do to support families understand what children need before they enter our system. And that's one of the sort of side benefits of early childhood, is that family engagement piece and us being able to inform what's going on in the home that much earlier. And we, in our programming right now, we target in our Kinder Ready program, we're at about a 65% scholarship rate. So those are families who qualify in that lower socioeconomic status. And so we feel like we have that target group for that reason, so that we can make a big impact. Let's see, make sure I didn't. It is really in my – the other thing I want to mention is in terms of Southeast, our state is so incredibly diverse, right? You all know that. You all come from all over. That is our gift and our challenge. And that's the other thing I want you thinking really strategically about when you write this bill. Just like in a classroom, if I have the best curriculum and I have the best intervention strategy, when I plunk that on top of a class of 25 kids, it doesn't work for every single one of them. It just won't, no matter how good the program is, how much money we spend on it. We have to think more strategically like than that. And our state, the needs of our districts, the needs of our communities are so diverse. And so that's just another filter to think about, that we don't have unintended consequences and that we really are being as strategic as we can. As Southeast superintendents, we've started talking as a group because we're a region and we have our own special challenges and the cost factors for getting to professional development, et cetera. So we're looking at ways that Juneau, as an example, could be a hub for some professional learning experiences, and we could bring teachers to Juneau. That's much more reasonable, less time out of classrooms, less cost to a district than heading up to Anchorage, as an example. So we're looking at different ways that we can leverage resources as a region in this particular area around reading instruction. And I'm really excited to have a few more months of those conversations to see what we can come up with. What I really want you to know is that we are all in, and it's an opportunity that I don't want to see 5 years down the road gone away, because it didn't hold. I'm not sure if I used up my 20 minutes. one last thing, and then I'll leave you be. As I last summer was really doing a lot of reading about reading and achievement, I kept coming across a few things. High quality instruction, no matter what I read, what direction, high quality instruction, effective interventions, high levels of engagement, and reducing classroom distractions, because our behavior with our needs, our behaviors are going up extraordinarily than 5 to 10 years ago. And in that whole digesting of so many pieces of that, I realized what we're doing is we've changed a finish line. It's a sense of our finish line used to be graduation. And when I started, we just graduated kids. There was no accountability. Nobody counted. I couldn't tell you. Nobody could have told you what our graduation rate was. We didn't count those things. There was no accountability, no measure. And if kids were equipped, they made it. And if they weren't, they didn't. We've grown so much in education of the importance of accountability, importance of measuring, and keeping track of where we're making progress and where we aren't. When we started doing that, graduation rates went up across the country. If we take that finish line and we push it to third grade, which is what this feels like, really high stakes decisions being made for children at third grade, I think two things. One, now accountability has to be super well thought out, because the decisions are very high stakes for very young children that haven't, many of whom have had some extreme challenges up to that point. And time is on our side. Time is on our side. It is not a race. It's a journey. And the other thought I had was, what if we had that dotted line in a different way in everybody's mind, and we very strategically focused on the sum of the strategies and put resources there? Would we see the same result that we are doing with graduation rates? Would we see a big impact because we changed our expectation from this being the end game to this being the end game, but doing it again in a way that is supportive and inspirational, not blaming, not shaming, and constructive to fit the needs of a diverse state of constituents and families and children. So I am really excited about what we can do in Alaska, and I'm excited for what this bill can do to support it. I am afraid of some of the components and the impact. And I probably won't be around to see those long enough, because it'll be 5, 10 years down the road And I don't want us to go backwards because this is such an important effort. So, again, you have a very complicated job, and I appreciate you hearing from a superintendent. We are deeply engaged in the work, and we want nothing more than to help you help us be successful.
Thank you, Superintendent. It's always great to have you with us, and appreciate your comments and your perspective, and even sort of the warnings, of maybe storm warnings of potential problems that we could be facing.
Right.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to an old friend. He's not old. He's not so old, of course. I am, but he's not. Norm Wooten with the Alaska Association of School Boards. Pleasure to have you with us, Mr. Wooten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Norm Wooten. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I appreciate this opportunity to testify, and thank you, Senator Begich, for introducing this legislation. I'll try to be brief out of respect for your time this morning. Pre-K is a topic that is near and dear to the hearts of school board members. For many years, we've had resolutions supporting both pre-K and reading proficiency by the third grade. The 2011 report of the Alaska Advisory Task Force on Higher Education and Career Readiness stated in part, children who receive quality early education arrive at school ready to learn and perform better in school. They are less likely to need expensive special education interventions, and they are more likely to graduate from high school and to successfully enter the workforce. Research is clear that when students enter kindergarten, 40% of them on average are 1 to 3 years behind grade level, and too many of them stay behind throughout their school careers. Alaska can invest a relatively small amount in early childhood and innovative K-12 programs, or on the other hand, a vastly greater amount at the college level. Today's third grader can't wait for, and our public treasury cannot afford, a remediation response that doesn't happen until the third grade. Reading and literacy are the great equalizers in the world in which we live. Students who cannot read are educationally crippled. In every other academic subject, as well as being career disadvantaged throughout adulthood. Our children must learn to read, and they deserve no less from us. We unequivocally support pre-K, early assessment of reading proficiency, interventions for less than proficient readers, and high-quality professional development to enable educators to create proficient readers. However, my recommendation is to carefully consider the provision for retention of students. It just seems to me like that retaining a child for a lack of reading proficiency may be more of a failure of the system rather than the fault of the child. I applaud the bill's provision for early assessments and implementation of interventions. This seems to be a more logical approach than retention and one that is more about improvement. I would also ask that the committee consider what some of my members are calling over-prescriptive details for districts to implement. It seems as if providing high-quality professional development to educators and paraprofessionals in reading, instruction, and intervention, and then holding them accountable would be more productive and better serve students in our quest for reading proficiency by the third grade. My final concern is the aggressive timeline for implementing the provisions of the bill. I'm apprehensive about the capacity of DEED to find sufficient numbers of educators trained and competent in teaching reading, implementing interventions, and providing professional development for those needing assistance. I want to be optimistic about the schedule because our students need these skills so desperately. However, should DEED not be able to fully implement the programs called for in the bill, some legislators and the public might deem the initiative a failure and back away from the funding before giving it an opportunity to improve our children's reading proficiency. Please do not take my concerns as opposition to the bill. I am excited about addressing what I refer to as the reading crisis. AASB's resolutions adopted by our membership have sought this type of state support for years. Our districts are anxious to begin the work. none of us want to graduate yet another class of students with less than highly proficient reading skill. I only ask for careful consideration of the legislation to ensure it is the very best we can provide for our students. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify before this committee, and thank you for considering this bill. I am excited.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wooten. As always, I appreciate your comments, and that's a great concern that we all have. How do we find the professional staff to do what we want to do? How do we find the reading specialists? How does the department find the personnel it needs as well? So another great warning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
And move on to our final presenter, and we'll see if we have some time left for questions after that. Tim Parker, president of NEA Alaska, is often here in the room with us, but I think he had to be in Anchorage. Mr. Parker, are you with us online?
I am. Can you hear me, Senator Stevens?
Yes, very clearly. Thanks for being with us, and please, you have the floor.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your allowing me to testify. It's a pleasure. I'm actually in Washington, D.C. today, doing some work lobbying our congressional members. I appreciate your mention of the Kaktovik fire at the beginning, Senator. That was it's tragic, and it's something that loss is hurting us, and we're thinking about it. So thank you for making sure that was noted for the record. You know, loss of a school hurts, and we can and must build another one in Kaktovik. And we do it because we care about students in every community, and we want student learning to happen. And you've heard me say this before. I always talk about this, but the 12,000 members that I represent, both teachers and support staff, are so motivated by student learning. Making sure that happens, that's the why of why we do our jobs. We love it when it happens, and when we hit a bump in that process, nobody feels it more acutely than we do. And so this is our passion, and this is what we bring to this work. By that same token, we want the Alaska Reads Act to succeed. Reading, as you know, is fundamental. It opens the doors to learning, and it's where many, many parts of the learning process start. So we have to get this right, and we want to get it right. And I think this bill is going to help us get there. The current bill that you have before you is a product of Alaska's Education Challenge. And that's very important. All of you, I believe, were part of that process. Parents, school board members, educators, community leaders from every part of the state, everyone was around those tables doing that work. And at the center of that, as you remember, the swirl, the document with the three swirls on them, is an excellent education for every student. It's a great phrase. It's actually one that's in statute, which is awesome. But it's surrounded by the three swirls: increasing student success, cultivating safety and well-being, and supporting responsible and reflective learners. Those are key phrases. But I want to put an extra, little extra point on the idea of educator buy-in. It happened for the challenge during that process, and we want to recognize that. We want to make sure we do that again when we move this bill forward. The commissioner had a big role to play in making sure that the buy-in happened for that challenge. And it's because of that work, I think, that we're here today looking at this bill as a good idea. For the teachers and ESPs that, we look at things just a little bit differently maybe than school boards and superintendents and principals. We have members in virtually every one of Alaska's 500 schools. And when we were getting the buy-in, you know, I worked as hard as I possibly could to get the Alaska Challenge in front of each of them. And that's not an easy challenge. I wish my numbers were much smaller sometimes when it comes to putting something in front of them. But it popped up at staff meetings. It was discussed in staff lounges. We talked about it at union meetings. And we looked intently at the language that the Alaska's Education Challenge put forward. That's what we do. We're educators. Language is very important to us. Every word was considered carefully. And we believe that the five trajectories are the right way to go. And two of those ideas are before your committee this session, which is awesome. The third grade, read by third grade, Alaska Reads Act is one of them. And the other is tribal compacting. And I look forward to the other three potentially coming up. That would be the attracting and retaining great educators. That's a critical success. But so is career, technical, and culturally relevant education, meeting the workforce needs, and also closing the achievement gap and achieving equity. Those are really big goals. And if we keep our eye on those five, I think Alaska is going to be in a much better place as we move forward. So I applaud you moving on this. So So now the Alaska Reads Act, like I said, your teachers and ESPs want this to succeed, and we like a lot of the things in this bill. We like the research and evidence-based aspects of it. There's nothing more important than that. That's our guide and our shining light as we move forward through looking at this at the lens that we're taking. Now, we're going to study research and evidence very hard. We really like the pre-K. The pre-K is a big deal to us. You know it. Studies show that, you know, a solid pre-K program is important to success in reading. You've had testimony on early childhood education and its critical role that it plays. Just last spring, we heard from a whole host of people on that particular topic, so I hope you have that file handy because it's all in play right now. We really like the connections with families. Reading at home and the support that adults outside of school give to their children as they're growing up, that's critical. We can't do this without it. The child's development of language starts at birth. Households that have lots of words and dialogue and with children, reading and talking and developing those skills, they come to school in a much better place. And then, of course, having a pre-K program there to launch off that is even better. And then when they arrive in kindergarten, they are ready to go. But this bill actually goes even further and continues to emphasize those family connections as they're moving through those pre-K through third grade years and building those skills. So we really like the connections with families. Early interventions and differentiated instruction are both things that are in there that we really like. We have to intervene early. Waiting is not a helpful strategy. You need to find out who's struggling, and you need to get the resources and different strategies in front of them really quickly. And finally, we also really like the broad focus on reading that includes phonics and phonemic awareness. And the term science of reading doesn't bother us because we know that's based on research and evidence. And we also like that the bill doesn't stop there, but it talks about comprehension, building content knowledge, oral reading, and literacy. Those are all fundamental skills that are included in our standards that we continue to want to teach and work on. So how can we be helpful? That's our thought as your educators in the state. You have 8,000 teachers in Alaska, and if you think about it, if you want to chop it for this bill a little bit, 2,500 of the teachers teach in kindergarten, first, second, or third grade. And so I mentioned earlier we have 500 schools, but chop that one down a little bit because not every school has those particular grades in it. So you're looking at roughly 350 of the schools that include these programs that we're specifically talking about in this bill. Each of those schools has ESPs that play a big part in the reading development. We think they're critical to the success. A lot of times they're the ones delivering some of the specialized instruction side by side with teachers, and we want to make sure that's supported. We appreciate the team support that I think is reflected in this bill with principals and district staff and the training and professional development is going to be super important to this. That's reflected in there. We think that's good. These professionals, your teachers and ESPs out there, they're the key to the success, I think. They're all watching, they're listening, they're paying attention to what you're doing, and they're emailing me about this bill quite often. And they have so much experience to bring to the table. Many have advanced degrees in reading on top of decades of professional knowledge. We need to tap into that expertise. We need to continue to let that play out, not just in these committee meetings as we develop this and move it through the legislative process, but we need to push it forward so that it remains a critical part of the bill. And as the bill moves through years and years of really good implementation, that the voices of our educators are being listened to and being factored in. I personally have tapped into this knowledge by bringing together a team of about a dozen super highly respected and experienced reading instructors from around the state. I've met with them numerous times, and they probably spent as much time or more than me or maybe even you on reading this bill, comparing it to other bills around the country, holding it up against the best research. So we're doing our homework, and that's something we really value and take our time doing. So give us a little bit more time to work on those parts. But in our initial discussions, as we've done some preliminary work on this, two concepts surface over and over again. I want to share them with you just so you can think about them conceptually and decide how to factor them into the bill. Almost every teacher is going to bring up the concept of time during their process of thoughtfully thinking about how they're going to implement this. That's because time is one of the most valuable resources that we have as teachers. It's really under fire a bit. We put our teachers in positions where they are in front of kids more in the United States than any other country. Studies have us on average spending 28 hours per week in front of kids in a teaching mode. That's higher than any other country. The world average is 19 hours per week, and there's some countries that are as low as 15 hours per week. So we know we already have big, big time pressures on our teachers. They do not have much time to prepare lessons. They don't have much time to get them to look the way we want them to look. Why we do that, probably a money issue, but that's one of them. The other issue, class size, and Senator Hughes said this at the end of your meeting earlier this week. She'd heard from a first grade teacher in her district who has 26 students in her class. That's a big deal. I went ahead and looked up some of the larger class sizes for schools in each of your districts. And Senator Begich also has 26 students in first grade at Fairview Elementary. And Senator Coghill has 28 students in second grade at North Pole Elementary. I know Senator Costello isn't in the room, but she has 27 students in first grade at Sand Lake Elementary. And even in our little bit rural area of Kodiak, East Elementary School has 23 in both of their third grades. These numbers are a little bit bigger than they need to be. You have spent some time hearing from some folks about Florida and some of the things they do, and they did a lot of stuff. They made a lot of changes, and one of them that I think was referenced, but I want to put it back on the record if it hasn't sunk in completely, is the cap size limits on for class sizes. They have a cap of 18 for K-3. 18 is a pretty great number, and I think you heard from some of the other testifiers today that that number in the K-1-2-3, that is the research-supported thing. It's not the number we have in the majority of our classrooms in Alaska. Florida also limits it in for 4 to 8, they limit it to 22, and then in 9 to 12, they limit it to 25. I know that as I say those numbers, many of my fellow teachers around the state are probably falling over in their chairs because our class sizes are nowhere near those limits. They are blowing out pretty consistently, especially in all of our urban areas. Our recommendations, we have a few, and I think you've maybe picked up on one of them. We need educator voice and educator buy-in to make this work. We've had a lot of horror stories of bad implementation over in the past, and we don't want this one to be into that zone. And so, taking our time, getting it right is important. We also have the knowledge of looking at the 37 other states that have adopted statewide reading policies. And we have a lot to learn from them, good and bad. They've experienced a lot. And our policymakers could learn a lot, I think, from us, the professional educators who have been teaching kids to read for years. We do this teaching in the face of large class sizes, pink slips, trauma, poor curriculum, misguided administrators, scripted curriculum, and more. Those are all realities that my members and talk about a lot. So I just want to make sure you know that those are concerns. We have a lot to offer this policy debate, and for the Alaska Reads Act to be a success, there are some must-haves. And educator voice and buy-in are there. The parental engagement, parental buy-in is important. Stability in our educational system and adequate resources and support for all students. That adequate resources point, shows up every day when we see the large class sizes, that we know that we're working behind the gun on that. And when we think back to student learning, how I opened, the idea of investing in what you want to see happen, I'm sure that you've heard the phrase that budgets are moral documents. They show up, where they show where a group, or in this case a state, puts its priorities. We have, we flat funded or essentially flat funded education for 7 years. And your system is strained and almost to the breaking point. And it's this system that we want to pick up Alaska's Education Challenge and move it to success. And we think we can do it, but it is going to take it is going to take a focus on resources. And I'd be remiss not to mention one other point, which is the socioeconomic and trauma impacts that our students face on a daily basis. That's one of the aspects of the challenge, and we have done some work in that area, and I applaud the state for what they've done there, because without any move in that area, it is really challenging, because students who show up to school hungry or unfed or in a, having suffered a traumatic incident, you can't get to learning. You can't get to the reading thing until you solve those things. And every educator knows that. We're assessing kids every day as they walk through the doors. And if they are hungry or in a traumatic situation, those have to be dealt with. And that takes time, effort, and you have to do it. You can't put a book in front of them and say, let's get to reading. You know, that's not it. So just to wrap up, we love pre-K. We know pre-K is a game changer for reading and for our whole public school ecosystem. We have many, many thoughts and ideas about how to ensure that reading component in this bill is successful for students. For it to succeed, you need to have educators, administrators, and all Alaskans at the table and engaged. I think that's a critical piece. And, you know, I would say we're cautiously optimistic that, you know, we can get to this challenge. If you bring all these different groups together, we're all partners in this process. I think we can work together and get to something that will work and ensure that students are put first. So that's our focus, and very much appreciate your giving me the chance to testify. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Really appreciate your taking time to be with us. Even though you're traveling, you're often here in town, in Juneau, in the capital, helping us work through these problems. I know there are a lot of questions. We'll get to those in a minute. I just want to let the folks know what the plan is and where we're going. This is a tremendous opportunity, a tremendous potential in this bill, and it's our intention to make this the very best bill we possibly can before it leaves this committee. This is the content committee. We're the ones who deal with content here in this committee, and eventually it'll go to finance, where they deal primarily with the fiscal issues and how we pay for it. But this is the committee to get things as right as possible before it leaves our hands. This coming week, I'd ask everyone who has an amendment or any changes or any potential things they want to see in this bill to contact us to make sure they get us their suggestions. The Monday will be the deadline, 10 a.m. Monday, for formal amendments, and beyond that, we'll be discussing it this coming week. We've heard from all the quadrants out there, from parents and teachers and school boards and teachers and everyone else. We appreciate your input into this. It's not going to be an easy problem to get an easy solution to get it right, but we're going to do it the best we can. So please get to us with any concerns you have. We'll try to get through this next week. Senator Begich, you have some responses to some of the things we've heard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to talk just about the process of building a bill a little bit. And I mentioned a little bit of this earlier. And in this process, when we finally got the beginning of a written document in late December, right around Christmas time, one of the first reach outs we did was, of course, to Bridget Weiss's and Dr. Parody's group, the early education group, on the 9th of January, just to get their input, give them a general outline of what the bill in its principles would do. And, you know, at that time, a lot of ideas were generated. The next day, we met with an early education group that Posey Boggs has statewide education group talking about early learning dyslexia and those kinds of learning disabilities, because we wanted to be sure we didn't put a written document out that didn't at least take some of that into account. All of us love education, and everyone who just testified, and Mr. Parker just reminded me of how integrated this is into the education challenge, what we're trying to do here, and those of us here at the table who are participant in that, and those of us who continue to move forward with that agenda have been talking about these issues for years now, three and a half years now, not counting all the years prior to that we've been discussing. I remember that you actually initiated an Alaska Literacy Act back in, I think it was 2013, that is a lot of which is incorporated in this. So this is not new to us. These are the issues. But what has happened in the past is every time we've tried to build something that moves towards one or another of the elements that were identified now in the challenge, the weight of the bill has caused it to collapse. And so listening to all the different ideas that people have out there, we could add and keep adding and keep adding, and I'm hopeful that we won't do that. What I'm hopeful that we'll do is incrementally grow and build our education system so it supports the growth of our kids. And that's what the bill tries to do. It can't be everything to everybody, and I'm sorry that it can't be, but I wish it could be. But here's some of the things that I think are important from the testimony I heard today. First, Dr. Weiss mentioned the language that she felt was shaming on page 2, line 26. I don't have any need to have that language in there. Let's take that out. Part of the process is evolving our thoughts so that we can make those changes we need to so the bill doesn't do an unintended thing. So that, to me, is a great suggestion, something we can deal with immediately. Dr. Wooten mentioned that, quote, today's third grader can't wait for and the public treasury can't afford a remediation response that doesn't begin until third grade. Exactly, Norm. That's why this bill begins before third grade with that process, because we can't wait. The issue of the timeline and productivity, Dr. Wooten's absolutely right on the button that it's possible we can't meet the timelines that are in this bill, but why not at least set them as aspirational goals? And here's what we can do. And we are actually, this will be in the CS that I think we're working on right now, Mr. Chairman. And that will be that we'll lay out regular reporting of progress, not just a 30-day report, because what will 30 days from June 30th or July 1 tell us? It won't tell us much of anything. In fact, it puts an undue burden on the commissioner. But what if we're reporting annually about progress toward these goals that we set? That actually, that reported to our committee and the committee in the House, that actually will inform us even better than any other thing that we could do. So we're going to incorporate that into the CS. I heard there was a comment made about teacher retention. I want you to point out again that the governor who worked with us on this bill is a complete partner on this bill, also mentioned in his State of the State the importance of teacher retention. And I had an opportunity with the other leaders of the legislature and the chief of staff of the governor to talk about that yesterday. And to say, what does that commitment look like? And I think you're going to see something develop that will be a separate piece of legislation dealing specifically with retention issues. I'm hopeful that that will happen. And I'm looking forward to that, and I intend on being aggressive about that conversation. I think those are important things. Funding doesn't matter. I've never said that, and I never would. Funding is what makes these things real. And I want to point out my surprise and shock when the fiscal notes were presented in our second hearing. This is the fourth hearing on the bill already, and we have, I think, at least three more planned. My shock at the commitment from the administration to add additional resources to this bill, specifically around support to teachers, support to districts, support to superintendents and professional development, I think is critical, and that's why it's actually written into the bill. So those comments and thoughts have been heard. And they're integrated even more deeply in the CS. And you'll see that when the CS comes out. We're taking your ideas, and we're integrating them into this legislation. The last thing I just want to talk about is nothing in this bill will change the current retention policies in any district in the state. Every district in the state can retain a student today, and they can do so. Nothing imposes or directs a district to impels a district to do more than what they would normally do. We have good teachers. Tom Claymire pointed out at the same conversation last night that we were having with the civil discourse. We have good teachers who want to teach reading, but if those kids come to school unprepared, all of their efforts fall apart. We have good teachers who want to do the best they can for kids, but if we don't prepare the kids before they come, the early learning component, then those efforts fall flat, not because the teacher is incompetent or capable or the district isn't doing everything within their power, but because they simply are unprepared to learn. By the same token, you cannot take a good pre-K program and not back it up with strong reading. It will fail, and those kids will not progress as they could. This bill braids those. So I made a passionate comment last night at this, probably too passionate, last night at the civil discourse dinner, but I think this is the step that moves us in the right direction, and I'm pleased that there are going to be at least three more days of testimony for us to be able to deal with this. So Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to respond to those things. I have some other notes, but I know that others want to talk about their feedback on the presentation. But just to reemphasize, we're not starting from scratch. We're starting from decades of testimony in this committee. We're starting from the work that was done even before Shelley and I served in this body. We're talking about the work of the Alaska Challenge. We're talking about the work of teachers and superintendents and principals and educators for decades and decades and decades. And I think this might be one more good, solid, incremental step in the right direction.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Just a note on fiscal notes. We have five of them, and I have asked the University of Alaska to prepare an additional fiscal note. I think there's enormous responsibility that falls upon the university in this process. They will have to find a way to make sure that their departments of education are up to speed and are teaching teaching teachers to teach reading. And beyond that, they'll have to be prepared to, I hope they'll be prepared to help teachers currently in the field to bring them up to speed as well. So I haven't seen that fiscal note. I hope that they are giving it honest consideration and they will be receiving that soon. So going back to the committee then, any questions or comments?
I know the bell's rung, so I wanted to defer to Senator Coghill if he had something, because I have a series and I can hold some of them.
Sir,
let me know if one of the things I love the fact that our rates for ACT and SAT tests that were right in the pack, we're doing well as far as the national average. But as a follow-up question, I'd like to know if our percentage of students taking those tests is the same percentage you see in other states, because those tend to be what some might call our high-end students, our students that probably wouldn't need the intervention that this bill is talking about. So it's a great data point, but I'm not sure how relevant it is to this bill. Also, in our even though we're trying to stick to the bill, the teacher recruitment retention factor, one of the things I believe, no matter what profession a person in it is in, Mr. Chair, if they are being successful in their mission, they're more apt to stick with what they're doing. And I think as with this type of policy, there would be a built-in reward because more children would be succeeding. So as that second grade teacher has a group of students incoming who are better prepared, that teacher will be sending students onto the third grade that are even better prepared after that. And there's going to be a sense of reward for those teachers. And that is not just through K through third grade. That's going to be all the way up into the middle school, high school, because, you know, the 10th graders are coming in, are going to be better prepared. So I think this will actually help with retention, and we might see that help. It's not the sole solution to the turnover rate, but I think it would be helpful, so I just wanted to point that out. I heard the school board and the superintendents association express some concern about what I call the proficiency-based promotion policy. And I would just ask if intervention paired with what I call PPP, proficiency-based policy, has worked so well, and we saw those charts, the states that had both pieces, they had better scores, they had greater improvement among their students, and the states that only had the intervention piece did not have the PPP. They had lower schools and less improvement. So if there's a state that where they only did the intervention and not the PPP that can match the other states, I'd like to know what those states are, because I haven't been able to find that. Also, I received a text from Dr. Goyette with the Mat-Su School District. And she and Dr. Bishop have both indicated to me that they are comfortable. They don't fear a promotion-based, a proficiency-based promotion policy, and they would be happy to come and testify, Mr. Chair, if that would be something that you would like. I also want to mention something that's a bit anecdotal, and I don't want to mention what districts they are because I don't have their permission. But while I was education chair, as well as last year, I have had school board visit my office on occasion, as I'm sure everyone in this room has, and I welcome them from around the state, not just from the Anchorage School Board and Mat-Su School Board that are relevant to my district. And in several conversations, sitting in my little office on the couch, I had school board members from small districts saying that they were very concerned about the what they would call social promotion. And he asked, you know, how could we help with that? I mean, how can we make sure students are graduating with valuable diplomas and have mastering the objectives along the way? And they were explaining, even though that they sometimes knew as a school board it would be better not to promote a certain student, that because they're a small community, they all know one another, they might be the auntie or the grandparent, that for them to have such a policy is very difficult, and they actually preferred that the state have some, I guess, be the bad cop, for lack of a better way to say it. And I've heard that on several occasions from some of the smaller districts. So I just want to put that out there, I think we need to continue having the conversation. I think there's a way we can learn from the other 37 states where we would not have a spike of students repeating grades, but we would have a spike in reading proficiency. So I look forward to continue conversation and want to keep an open mind. I agree as far as what Senator Begich said about we don't want something hurtful and shameful as far as to the teachers that are trying hard and the students. But also, I recognize that it's hurtful and shameful right now for a fifth grader or a ninth grader who has not learned to read, who is struggling because they can't read their science text, because they're struggling even taking their history test because they're having difficulty reading. And so, you know, what we're doing right now isn't really best for the students as far as hurtful and shameful. So I think there's a positive way to do this and a way that will actually not increase students being retained, but will really put some teeth to what we're putting forward. So it all comes about back to the students, Mr. Chair. So thank you for the opportunity to make comments.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Coghill.
Just a couple of things that come to mind. First of all, thanks to everybody who's putting the work in. Obviously, the class size becomes one of the questions. So I think of the resources that we have now, outside of putting a pre-K together, if we took our first and second grade classes down to a downsize, would we get pretty much the same result? And I'll be asking that question along the way. So all of you who have input, rather than creating a whole new program and doing some parental outreach at first and second grade, would we get the same outcome? So it's a matter of, we already have the 2,500 teachers. We might want to get better specialists, but the specialized training still has to happen to the first and second grade, third grade teachers anyway. So the matter of lifting everybody up is a question I have. And so I don't have the answer. I'm listening to the discussion. Trying to say, if we're going to use our existing resources, can we do it better? Or do we have to do this and still do that other? And I have to answer to my constituents to say, how come we're putting $1,500 million in the education system and they can't read? So I'm just asking the question. So just for what it's worth.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. So we're going to wrap it up in a few minutes here, maybe 6 minutes to go. Senator Begich, any thoughts you have at the end?
Sure, just a couple quick ones. You know, the CS has incorporated so many things, I didn't put them all on the table there, but one of them is a suggestion from Senator Hughes that we actually report back on class size so that we can begin to truly analyze the impact and what we can do about that down the road. So there is that provision. Also, there was Mr. Parker mentioned the 70 hours and the time constraint for teachers, and we actually have revised that as well to reflect the individual education plan for a kid. So that it actually reflects the reality of what a parent and a teacher has identified is important for the kid. So modifying as we go along, I'm looking forward to the next 3 days of hearings on this bill, 2.5, 3 days, and looking forward to it moving. And thank you so much for allowing the input in this. So this session is so important. for so many other reasons outside of education, but for providing the input and the opportunity for people to actually testify, modify, and build a better bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Just to remind folks that amendments are due Monday, 10 a.m., and we will be getting next week to have discussing amendments and other discussion changes. And I appreciate everyone's involvement today. At this time, I'll be setting Senate Bill 6 aside for further review. And I've asked the commissioner to keep us abreast of what's happening with Kaktovic. He's out of the office, out of the room right now. I'm sure he's on calls. So our thoughts are with that community and the future of education in that community. Thank you all very much. This meeting is adjourned.